I set a goal my senior year of high school is I wanted to impact 1 billion lives.
Really? Senior year in
That's
high school, you
freaking
thought of
awesome.
Yeah,
That's
I didn't
hard.
know how I would. I didn't
Okay.
know,
Those
you
are the best
know,
kind of goals.
what's that process? And so that's why I've kind of jumped more into a social presence because I'm in so many rooms and connecting and learning so many things. I'm like, why not share this with the world?
Yeah.
And there's so much that I soak up. I'm like, I just need to start sharing, and maybe someone picks up one or two things.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Benjamin Saylor Show. Today we have an awesome guest on here with us. We have Jeff Mann. We're excited to have him. Jeff and I grew up in the same town, so we're gonna talk a little bit about good old small town Parma here
Love it.
and talk more about what Jeff is doing. So yeah, we're excited to have you.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up?
Crazy story. So I was born in Maryland. I was adopted when I was 3 weeks old to Boise, Idaho. I've moved to Africa 3 times. So when I was 7 and 8, we moved to Zimbabwe. My dad was doing humanitarian work, and so I was baptized over in Zimbabwe, spent 2 years, moved
Wow,
back,
interesting.
went to middle school here, and then 8th grade year, he was called as a mission president. So then we moved to South Africa. So I was there for 3 years, and then my junior year, moved back to Parma, Idaho, went to school there, graduated, and then got my mission call to Ghana, West Africa. So went back to
Oh my
Africa for the
gosh.
third time.
So what was it like serving in Ghana then? Since you'd already gone there a bunch. Like, oh, this is
It,
home.
so here's the crazy thing. South Africa is like LA. It's like America, malls, it's
Really?
nice,
Really? It's
there's
not like, okay.
beaches. It's not like National Geographic when you see
Okay.
like the animals are
Yeah.
wild. Now you can drive and go to villages, and I'll show you some pictures after this podcast. It's beautiful. And but then Ghana's more third world. It's more of the Africa that you see on TV
Gotcha.
and everything. But there's different parts. So like if you go to the city, there's an Apple store, there's a McDonald's,
Yeah,
there's
it's nice there.
everything.
It's
But
clean.
you drive an hour, so I wouldn't say clean.
Oh, okay.
Nowhere. There's a smell when you get off the plane in Africa.
It never goes away.
Never goes away. But yeah, it's a whole, all three African countries were completely different. You know, being in high school and middle school there, you're talking uniforms, all boys school, corporal punishment is still allowed.
Wow.
So it's a complete shift from the schools in America.
So
Yeah, so
corporate
strict.
punishment? What does that mean?
So rather than detention, they can beat you.
Okay.
Or like a wooden paddle
What was your
or.
opinion on that?
So my mom didn't like it the first time it happened. The best way I can describe school in Africa is Harry Potter. So when you go to school, you're put into a house, same exact thing.
Really? Like
You
you have
have your
dorms and
uniform,
everything?
you have prefix, you have, so the older kids are treated a certain way than the younger kids. So like a senior to a freshman, as a freshman, I'd have to call a senior by their last name or sir. I can only walk on certain places. You can't walk on the grass. If an older kid goes to buy lunch, you have to step behind him. It's a completely different
Yeah,
system.
I read a book by Elon Musk, or maybe not by him, but it was about him, and he was kind of talking about that. Like when he was, he I think he
He's
was,
from South Africa.
South Africa, and he was talking about that kind of system where he was put into private school and he got beat, and some kids were just not
Yeah, it's
nice.
a whole different world
Yeah.
than what we're used to here. But it has its pros and it has its con. The other part of South Africa is it was, I mean, apartheid there was super recent. So the other thing you find, you'll have all the kids of different colors sit in their groups and they don't intermingle a ton. Some do that play sports, but they're still heavily separated.
So what's like the biggest sport they play there?
Imagine PE in high school.
Yeah.
You can go to the beach. You have
During
surfing
school.
during school.
That is so cool. I wonder if they do that in like towns in the US too, like on the edge of California.
I wish they probably get in too much trouble to do
Yeah, I
that.
think you're right.
But water polo, rugby, soccer, hockey are probably the biggest ones. Rugby is the biggest school sport. The other thing that's different there is, so the whole school has to attend the sports match. So if you're a freshman or sophomore, you have to register and check your name off that you attended the game or you can get detention. So
Wow.
for the older kids, it's awesome because it is packed because all the students are there. You have different chants that you learn. You
Yeah.
spell the words with your blazers. I mean, because you're out there in the sun in white shirt, tie, blazer. I mean, you're, like I said, it's completely Harry Potter. Best way
Wow.
to describe it.
Yeah, no,
That's
I
a
have a
great
good
description.
visualization
Yeah,
on
me
that.
too. I can see it. So then you served your mission there. How was your mission there?
So it was good. My parents work for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so a year into my mission, my parents got assigned to my mission. And so there'd be times I was riding my
No way.
bike
Are
and
you
I would,
serious?
yep, and I would see my
That is
mom
so
and
cool.
see my dad. And then on my,
As like a missionary couple.
so they were actually doing self-reliance for the church.
Wow.
And so just working with the people in Ghana, but it happened to be right in my mission. And so on my birthday, they came up and took the whole zone to, we all went and got lunch together. And I mean, I'd be walking and I could see my parents' car. I know they're like two rooms down from where I was. So it actually made me work harder.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get homesick way easier when mom's 10 minutes away versus across the country.
Well, when you were serving, you probably didn't have... I mean, when I serve, I could video my parents every week.
See, I call it the fake missions now because we used to get 7 minutes on Mother's Day and like 10 on Christmas. And you were fighting for that time.
Yeah.
And that's all you got to talk to them. And now I have kids that I've coached that call me, "What's up, coach? How's it going?" Every day on their mission.
Yeah. You're like, "Dude, get back to
I'm
work.
I'm like, go away."
So can they call anyone?
They're not supposed to.
No.
Not supposed
probably
to.
Probably freaking hang up that
way. Oh, yeah. Like, well, and I tell them, like, if they message me, I'll reply on their P-days. If it's a P-day, I'll answer. But if not, I'm like, just go focus. And but, like, I'm old enough where my mission was before they could allow 18-year-olds. So a year in is when they made the age change.
Okay.
And they sent all these young kids.
Oh, and you were like, you guys are just immature. So
they're pumped. Yes, right? And that was miserable. Because we got, you know, I was a zone leader at the time. And I had 12 companionships, so 24 missionaries.
Yeah.
And we were in the jungles of Africa, didn't have running water all the time, didn't have electricity all the time. And you get these 18-year-olds from Idaho, Montana, Utah. Never been away from home, never away from their moms.
Yeah.
And it was just
rough. Rude awakening. That's very, very rude. That's how it was for me. My first year, we got in the middle of nowhere. We didn't even have like toilet paper. I don't know if you experienced that.
Oh, yeah.
Right on the beach, tin roof, cinder block walls. I literally thought I was going to starve to death. I was like, where do we even get food here?
Well, and here's the thing, though. In that experience, the thing I've learned is on a mission, you don't have to worry about any bills.
Oh, yeah.
No, there's no rent. No. There's no mortgage payment. There's no car payment.
Yeah.
Like, you're so focused on the work, and that's all you have to worry about. And that's the thing I tell people. I say, as hard as the 2 years is, when you get back to real life,
it's way harder.
It's a whole different ballgame.
I think it's way harder. For me, my stage was like, when you get comfortable, you get really comfortable in that area. So I loved the MTC. It's like, oh, this is great. And then we moved on to the mission field. And I was like, take me back to the MTC. And I left the mission. And I was like, take me back to the mission.
Uh-huh.
Like getting a job, it's hard.
Well, and I had friends who on their mission wanted to, like, you know, they want to extend and stay out a few warm months.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going home. I'm done, you know. And it's a balancing act because you love the mission. There's nothing to worry about. But also, you do miss home and the regular life that you have and everything. I mean, I remember we flew back. I landed in Dallas. And the smell of cigarette smoke reminded us of home. And we're like, oh, we're back. It's cigarette smoke. And now I hate cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
But it's just those little things that remind you of home.
When I remember, like, the last, like, transfer of my mission, I was like, people would ask me, oh, are you, like, you ready to go home? Are you ready? Like, are you going to miss the mission? And honestly, I was like, when I got to the end of those 18 months, I learned, like, everything I was supposed to. And I was like, I know. I did everything. Like, it's almost like when you get into a transfer, or not a transfer, you get into a new area for so long and you're like, okay, I need to change. That's how I felt about my mission when
I
was done.
I completed everything.
Yeah, I'm like, I know everything. Like, I could have told you scripture after scripture and lesson after lesson, but yeah, there gets a point when you need to go home and you need to grow more, and that's kind of how I felt.
Because my parents were there, I was in my last area 11 and a half months. I was in the same area because I was on the farthest end of the mission from where my parents were, and I just... Missionaries came and went.
I cannot believe how did you survive that? Because I couldn't do that.
So it was we went through three or four different apartments, which helped.
Okay.
But then the last 4 months, the mission couple that we had went home on a medical emergency, and so they moved me and my companion into their apartment. Mm-hmm. And once they did that, I was fine because AC,
like hot showers,
hot water. Washer and a dryer.
Like, keep me for the rest of the
time. Uh-huh. And then we first moved in, you know, they didn't take any of their food. So then we had all this American food.
Yeah.
I mean, the first night, there was a TV in the house. It was just the two of us.
Yeah.
But we're living like a couple. Mm. And it was...
Microwave? Is there a microwave?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Bro.
It was everything back to normal life. And I loved it. So that helped. Because if we had been in, like, one of the ghetto apartments I had been in with, you know, no electricity, I would have struggled. But that last few months, it was great. You know, I loved it. I still talk to that area I was in, all the missionaries who served there. They're the closest friends in my life right now.
So in those 11 and a half months, I'm sure the members there loved you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were probably obsessed with you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, elder man.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't even an elder. By then, I was just one of the people.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
I was just one of the people. And, you know, one of my last Sundays was district conference. And the district leader called me up to the stand and made me bear my testimony. And, hey, we're losing this guy and everything. And the fun thing for my mission is, so I went into my mission over 300 pounds. I finished at like 185. And so huge shift in the way
like
I looked.
Fat?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Couldn't button my suit, waddling around, could barely ride the bike.
Did you have the same suit when you went home? Like, were you just drowning in it?
So I actually started getting custom stuff because it's super cheap to have stuff made there.
Okay.
So I would have them make me pants like every few months because I was dropping weight and everything. By the end, I mean, I could just fly around on my bike and could go for days. I mean, those first few weeks, dripping in sweat and, you know, you buy all this, what is it, from CCR clothing, which is terrible.
Yeah, those clothes suck.
Terrible.
The Sister Missionary Mall or something like that.
What was that store called? Called The Surf?
Yes. And that stuff is not meant for overseas.
No.
And it's not, you know, it's too hot.
It's super modern, like church clothes. It looks good, doesn't feel good.
Well, so here's my question for both of you. Since you served recently.
Yes.
You don't have to wear white shirts anymore, right?
No, I was like right at the end.
Okay.
So I served from 2018 to 2020.
Okay.
Yeah. And I came home 3 months early from COVID.
Okay.
Yeah, but I got to wear slacks on my mission.
Okay. Yeah,
that was really nice. I was in a biking mission. I was never in like a set biking area, but for sisters, it's like,
but
when you're in a biking area, you have like, try wearing a dress or a skirt.
And then the other question I have for you then is it true that sisters fight the most of companionships?
I would say more like petty fights.
She had this one companion who didn't talk to her for the whole transfer.
How did you guys teach?
She would talk to other people, so it'd show up, but the lesson probably
and people couldn't see?
I don't know. I tried my best. It was a really, really hard.
How did you do companionship study?
Very like, okay, what do you want to study?
Interesting.
And I would ask her what was wrong and what was going on, and she just wasn't wanting to talk to me. So to this day, I have no idea. I know that she did struggle with some other missionaries.
How long were you guys companions?
Three transfers.
Three?
Yeah.
But you had a trio. You became a trio.
But then we also, I also got another sister into my mission.
Do you know where that sister is now?
No.
Do you know her name?
I do.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you to reach out to her, connect with her, and have a conversation.
Wow.
Yeah, I should. Ask her how she's doing.
Yeah, you should.
I just thought she always hated
me. Good
job,
Jeff.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I should do that. Honestly, besides her, I didn't struggle with anyone else. I'm a pretty like relaxed, like whatever kind of a person, like pretty down to earth. But I know some other sisters like that are more high energy, got into a lot more fights. But I feel like from the elders of my mission, I could see some of them like that didn't get along either. So I don't know if I would say it's sisters, but you would say differently. You had to deal with sisters all the time.
Well, I know this. When my mission president would find a companionship of sisters that liked each other, they stayed together their whole mission because it was really hard for him to find sisters who got along. And so like all the sister companionships would be together for like no less than 6 months. That's how it was for my president.
We had sisters in our mission, but I never served in the same district or zone.
Really?
As sisters.
When I was a zone leader, I had a few sister companionships.
The stories were crazy. But also the sisters were all kept closer to the mission home.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah. They probably didn't serve way out where you were.
Yeah, we were called the Bushionaries because you were out in the bush. And the crazy thing is when I first got on my mission, the story we were told is the worst missionaries, like the apostate, the ones who don't follow the rules, go to the bush. And so you didn't want to go to the bush.
Yeah, I just see what you're saying for sure.
Yeah. But I went out there, I loved it.
Yeah.
It was so good. We had a group of, it was five African-Americans from California, Utah, Alabama, Florida.
So you guys were all from America.
Yep, we were all in the same zone. So we'd go on P-days and play like local high schools and basketball.
Yeah.
And go and do things like that. And we performed, a Boys to Men song? We performed that at the Christmas conference and changed the words and stuff. But we all got along.
It was just
we
English
loved
there,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what language did you speak?
So English speaking, but I picked up some of the local languages because being out in the villages, you communicate with the people better when you can speak their languages. Mm-hmm. And so by the end, I could have conversations. I just connected with the people. Because one of the things for me on my mission is, so my favorite person in the Bible is Paul. And one of the things he teaches is You know, to the Jews, I became a Jew. To the Romans, I became Roman. To the weak, I became weak. And so when I was on my mission, I was like, I need to be amongst the people if I'm going to reach them. And so I did my best to learn the languages, to kind of carry myself differently, and just immerse myself in the culture, in the community. Yeah. And, you know, I was there so long, I just became one amongst the people.
So do you feel like that specific principle has applied to your business today?
I think so. I call myself a chameleon. So I adapt to the situations that I find myself in. If I'm playing basketball, I'm one person. If I'm at a business dinner, I'm another person. If I'm at church, I'm a different person. So I adapt to, I guess, reach the people in the room that I'm with.
Yeah.
It's the same reason, like, as soon as I went through, Burley, Idaho.
Yeah.
I went from rap music to country music. When I get back to Idaho, when I'm
like
back out in high school.
Station, yep. Just like, all right, we're going.
Yep. Yeah. Back home, Rami, you know, out in Parma, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Just the way I carry myself and everything. So I think that principle has applied a lot. And it's been helpful because a lot of times I found myself in rooms where I don't know if I was qualified to be in the room at that time.
Yeah.
But I guess you fake it till you make it.
So and that's your motto.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you have to sometimes, because people can sense when you're in a room and you stick out and they know you don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can be in a natural state and be one amongst the group, and I'm saying, you know, you still be authentic. It's good to stick out, but also make sure you're in a room and you contribute. Like I've been to masterminds where everyone goes around the room and talk. And these are multimillionaires, celebrities, everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my first time, I'm like, well, what am I going to say?
Yeah.
But I still, you know, there was value that I could add. And one of the things I knew about this room, everyone was highly religious. Not the same religion, but highly religious. And so faith was a big thing I could touch on, which connected everybody in the room. So I find what connects everybody and then use that to kind of mesh the conversation. And then it cements me in the room. And now I know enough people where I can go in different rooms. And I know somebody who knows me, so I can connect with them, and they intro me to other people, and it's just a domino effect.
Well, kind of relating back to that, something that we've kind of had to go through as we're developing this product. So we're just in this, like, whole new space. We meet with these people, and they're saying these words that we don't know, and all these different things. And it's sometimes, like, I'm like, I don't know why, like, if we can do this. Like, I don't know anything. But then I remember, the one thing I can contribute is we've been consumers for 23 years of our lives. And we know how to be consumers, and we know that we can be connected to that. So if they need insight on a consumer like me, I know exactly what they would like and what they don't like.
Yeah.
It's just like what you're saying, like find some way to stick out, but also find a way that you can connect with and provide value to the group of people you're around.
100%.
Yeah, my vocabulary has increased like these last 3 months, like further than they ever have, just because when you get in a new space, because I was in plumbing, right? And so I knew every single freaking thing there was in plumbing, but now we're in like e-commerce. And so it's like, it's all new vocabulary that we're learning.
Constantly. But
it's been great.
What is the vision behind the product then?
Sailor and I don't believe in public school.
Okay.
At all whatsoever.
Okay.
I believe that there's no one on this earth, because Christ isn't here, that could raise our kids better than we could. And so I don't want to send our kids to some school. I don't want to send them to some
daycare
where other people watch them. I want to do business with my wife, and I want to raise our kids and our business. And if I'm an employee, I can't do that. You know, if I'm working for someone else, I can't bring them to work every day. So we're doing this business specifically because, one, we want to create a lifestyle where our kids grow up learning marketing, learning sales, learning, you know, how to deal with people, learning communication. And I think those skills are valued more than any. And so realistically, it's not so much about the vehicle of like our business is what we're trying to do. We're not passionate about what we're selling. We're passionate about business. We're passionate about doing it together
and learning.
And I think the product we have is freaking amazing idea.
Yeah, it's definitely going to improve people's. It's definitely going to improve people's lives. But it's not like when we do reveal it, everyone will understand that it's not. It's a, what do you call that? No, I'm blanking on the word. It's not a need. It's a want kind of a product. People don't need the product.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's definitely not fixing pain. It's giving pleasure, I would say.
Yeah. So
and she came up with it, and it's good. We'll tell you about it after.
Okay.
We'll send you it.
We'll send you.
Okay. Get it.
We'll send you one.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll like it.
So that's kind of like where we're at, is we're just trying to honestly just grow constantly. You got to a point where the business he was in, where he kind of just like plateaued. And was like, hey, like, we just need to make this switch. Let's do something different. Let's grow. So that's kind of where we're at
Yeah, for me, it was like I've gotten to the point now where I value time more than money. Whereas before you have money, it's like, I just need money. Once I have money, I'm good.
Yeah.
But when you have it, it's like, okay, now we need time.
Yeah.
How can I get more time?
Yeah.
And the reason why we need time is so we can invest in ourselves and the thing that matters. And I didn't have that. I was working 80 hours a week. I was making great money, but 200 grand a year at 80 hours a week is the same as 100 grand a year at 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
Like, it's the exact same thing.
And you had a wife and a family.
And I had a family. And so I only would see them on like Sundays. As great as it was, because I don't mind working. I actually love working a lot. But I just didn't have time to invest in myself and who I was becoming. Like, up until a few months ago, it was really hard for me to actually sit down and just like read a book. Whereas now I can sit down, take time, read and study and write down notes. And I've learned so much these last few months and I have past few years about myself, about personal growth, about what we're trying to do. And it's been a great, great blessing. So that's our goal. We just want to live our lives together with our kids included in all of it. Like we have a little girl right now, she's a year and a half, and I want her to know everything about business. So when she's 18 years old, some people have the theory of, oh, I want them to take over my business. I don't care about that. I would prefer my kids to actually start their own business.
Okay.
And we'll help them. Like when they're 18, you start your own business. By the time you're 20, I'll help you be a millionaire. Like, and we'll just skyrocket this Compass Family wealth. Yeah. Realistically, we want to invest in a lot of charities too. You know, that's our goal is.
Yeah, we have a couple of things that we want to, like my sister, for example, has type 1 diabetes. So I want to be able to do as much as I can to provide a solution for that, or at least like help streamline that process. So that's it for us. But for you specifically, kind of on this topic, what do you envision your future family?
Yeah, what are your goals? Like?
My goal is, so I set a goal my senior year of high school is I wanted to impact 1 billion lives. That was my goal.
Okay. Dude, that's
really senior year in high school. Awesome. You thought of that?
Yeah, I didn't know how I would. I didn't know.
Those are the best kind of goals.
What's that process? And here's the great thing. So I said impact. I didn't say in a positive manner or in a negative manner. My goal is just to impact
let's hope it's positive.
A billion lives. And I hope it's positive. And, you know, it's like I had a buddy reach out to me yesterday. I hadn't talked to him in months. He just sent a text and said, hey, your videos came across on TikTok. Love the content you're putting out. Thank you. And so that's why I've kind of jumped more into a social presence, because I'm in so many rooms and connecting and learning so many things. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why not share this with the world?
Yeah.
And there's so much that I soak up. I'm like, I just need to start sharing, and maybe someone picks up one or two things. So my biggest one, I guess, is impact. And then for me, that's a tough question. It's probably, I want to create a career where I know most of the influencers in the world and I can connect. I'm working on a book right now that deals with making connections, and connecting with people. And so my job ultimately is if I can meet someone, I know the person somewhere in the world that I need to connect them to that can benefit their lives, whether physically, whether financially, whether it's their faith, whatever it is, I can make that connection. And that's what I think my purpose is here, is to just connect the right people. And so it's evolved. Years ago, I wanted to be a personal trainer. I was getting ready to open a gym.
So very recent.
So I had a choice of stepping into the job I am now or saying no and opening a gym with some buddies. I chose to step into a career, and it's been life-changing. And every day I drive by where the gym would have been, and I think, what would I be doing if I was still, trying to push? And personal training, as fun as it is, it burns you out. I worked with kids from 7th grade up to their senior year in high school. A lot of them are in college now. And so it was a fresh start for me, something different.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Because now it also allows me freedom to go watch kids that I've worked with, go play in their games, go and support them. And so it's really kind of adjusted my life.
So for all of our audience and our viewers listening here today, what is the job that you have now?
So I am a public relations director.
Okay.
PR is kind of a big umbrella. The biggest thing I can say is I create brand awareness for influencers and help get their name, their mission, I guess their goal to the world. So I take whatever the message is, and I see, do I need to get articles published about them? What events do they need to be speaking at? What podcasts they need to go on? My job is to take it and put them in as many spaces as possible, but then also help them learn, hey, this isn't a space you should be in. Hey, this is not a fit. I kind of become that buffer for people that want to connect with them and make sure it's the right fit and it's a win-win for everybody.
So how many like influencers, I say, would you like, so, are you working with now?
So I work for Chris Krung. He's a multimillionaire out of Utah.
Yes.
He's probably the biggest one that I work with. I have a few others, probably three or four that I work with that, not on the same scale that I work for Chris. Mm-hmm. But for them, I do the same things. And they're all levels of, you know, multimillionaire to just your average day Joe who wants to, you know, create some brand presence for himself. Mm-hmm. And so, but some of them, it's like someone reaches out to me and say, hey, I want to write a book. My first thing is, let me connect you with a ghostwriter. They can help you start working on your book, everything. When the book's done, come back to me and I can tell you, here's the best podcast to go on and talk about your book. Here's the editors to reach out to if you want to get articles published on your book. And so it's kind of a process that way. And then when that person gets the book done, written, everything, and they're speaking on stage, now they have a book they can give away when they're speaking. Yeah. And then that's when they start to capture leads or they start to grow their name. And so it's kind of this process that you follow.
So this job you're doing right now literally is perfect with your purpose.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're doing every day.
Yep.
You're just connecting people.
Yep.
And those people are connecting people.
So like today, I'll have a 5-hour drive home and probably 90% of it is going to be on phone calls and stuff because I can sit there and drive and I can talk about events coming up, ideas I have that's happening. And so that's where I live my life. In fact, I had to go see a doctor. So I have tendonitis here in my thumb, in this forearm. Mm-hmm. And he used to see it in people working in factories with trigger finger. And now what he's seeing, it's from texting.
Oh, really?
So it's that same thing sitting here doing all of this.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's actually, this just right here is extremely painful. I mean, it's probably a 7 out of 10, the pain that just doing this.
Are you serious?
And so, but it's, my phone is my office.
Yes, and what are you going to do?
I just continue, manage it. I get it worked on, put some ice on it.
You should figure out a type like this.
Oh, tell me. What I've been doing is the voice to text.
Yes, that's...
But sometimes that thing don't read your voice right.
Yeah,
and I'd be sending some out-of-pocket thing.
Yeah.
And so, I'll drop a bunch of voice memos and things that way. But like, I was working out with a buddy this morning, and he's like, you're working because between every set, it's like boom, boom, phone call, boom, boom, phone call.
Yeah.
Which is nice because my office travels with me. But it's also a downside because that means you're working 24/7. And, you know, someone in Miami is 2 hours ahead. So their day has started, they're going. And so I've had to learn to create, I guess, barriers for myself where I disconnect from everything and take time away from me on the weekends. I mean, my favorite thing on a Saturday, melatonin, some good food, and let me watch Hulu. Don't bug me and just relax. I just lay there. And just my dog's next to me and I just relax because the whole week is just, you know, and you're constantly on stage.
Yeah.
So even if I go eat somewhere with people, I'm still working. So even a meal, you're not really enjoying it. I mean, good food,
relaxed.
Good company, but you're still thinking, okay, who should I connect them to? What questions are they asking? Mm-hmm. What information can I pick up? And so you're like on a stage 24/7. And so that's why I do like when I do a long drive versus a short flight. Is because it's just me. Mm-hmm. I don't have to perform for anybody. I don't have to, you know, smile all the time. And I can just relax.
So I want to go back to that change that happened where you're like, okay, gym owner or PR director. What was that like? I know that you're religious. How was that? How did you decide to actually go into that?
So here's the crazy thing. So I went to school for PR. Graduated Utah Valley University. Oh,
okay. UVU.
And so, yes.
The Wolves.
Yes.
The Wolverines?
Wolverines.
Yeah.
The best college. So my major is public relations. My minor is marketing. So I went to school for that. I started coaching sports. And parents started to look at me. And just based off the way I looked, they're like, hey, could you work with our kids? And so that kind of took me on a detour. And I started doing personal training.
Okay.
Started with 2 kids in the 7th grade. And built it up to 150 athletes.
Oh my
gosh.
Just weightlifting
or speed and rugby?
Yep, speed and agility, weightlifting, mobility, stability. And I was coaching, rugby, football, basketball, baseball. I've coached it all.
Coaching everything.
And so did that for years. I loved it. But I went to school and, you know, I talked to tons of people. So PR is perfect for me.
Yeah.
And so I got a job offer. Chris's team reached out on LinkedIn and interviewed with them, went to their event, interviewed with some other people, and just so many things clicked. So this was on a Saturday, and by Monday they had a job offer. And so I looked at it and I said, let's give it a try.
You knew it right away. Mm-hmm. That was kind of your thing.
And so jumped into it and learned a ton and have traveled the world. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful synergy ever since. And, you know, I still miss the gym and stuff. And, you know, I still have kids will reach out. Hey, can you write me a program? Can you do this? And, you know, I either will do it or I'll refer them to someone I know. And the gym still is a heavy part of my life. I have a trainer that I work with weekly. I still go every day.
Yeah, I can tell.
And I try.
You're pretty jacked.
Thank you. Yeah. But the other reason, and this is the crazy part, my fitness journey now actually plays into my business. So my thing that I've always worked on is if I shake someone's hand, mm-hmm. I want them to see a little bit of muscle, a little bit of strength, and I want them to know that, hey, I take care of myself, which means I'm going to take care of you.
Yeah.
Because for me, how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so if they understand that I dedicate myself in the gym and I'm working to make myself healthy, mm-hmm. I'm going to work to help whatever client that is achieve whatever goal possible.
Yeah. If anyone needs motivation to get into the gym, that was a great statement.
Oh, thank you.
In my personal opinion, when someone is very fit, I think that is prime time.
Yeah.
What they should strive to look at.
I would agree with you, Sailor. I think when you're fit, you just attract a lot more people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're more healthy, and mm-hmm. I think you're in a better mental space as well.
100%.
Well, and do you guys ever watch musicals?
I do. I love musicals.
Okay. Have you ever seen the musical Cabaret?
Actually, no.
So it takes place in Germany.
Okay.
And it is right before the Nazis come to power, and there's a song in it where a guy is dancing with basically a gorilla. It's a female in a gorilla costume. Mm-hmm. And the song is, he's basically saying, if you could see her through my eyes. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, so the world, this is what they view her. She looks like a gorilla, everything. He's talking about how beautiful, how wonderful she is. But at the end of the song, what he says is, she wouldn't look like a gorilla if she wasn't a Jew. And so what the song is translating is the view of what people view Jews at. Mm-hmm. Could be the most beautiful, wonderful person, but because at the time they were a Jew,
yeah.
they were seen, because in the audience, you're laughing because it's a gorilla, everything. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect way to, I guess, show people how Jews were treated. Because you're laughing at this person, yeah, everything. Yeah. And then right before intermission, he says the line, you wouldn't see her this way if she wasn't a Jew. And then the lights cut, everything. And then now you're stuck for the whole intermission.
Sitting there thinking about that.
Exactly. And like, oh, wow, I was laughing at this. And then it also shifts how you think of people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm the most judgmental person. I will people watch and make fun of people all the time. And so I've even had to catch myself because I'm like, take someone who's overweight. If you're overweight, but you're trying to work at it, mm-hmm. I am fine with that. But what I can't deal with is people who are overweight who they just sit in the basement. They don't try and change or try to help themselves. I think that's where society is struggling, is because we take people who do have a choice and they're able to change themselves, whether physically, whether mentally, whatever they need to work on. Mm-hmm. And we put them in the same boat as people that are just lazy. And so you have lazy people and you have people who are trying to work hard. And I even did a video on social where it was Grant Cardone talking about, we have Pride Month, we have Black History Month. And he started going about, he said, why don't we have a month for the people that are successful? But then we need a month for the people that are lazy. I mean, we either have to celebrate and support everybody rather than pick and choose these minor groups that, mm-hmm. that we're doing. And so like we were just talking about Lizzo, she appeals to a certain demographic of America. Mm-hmm. And so if we can celebrate her and her size, we shouldn't get mad at all the fitness influencers who are posting about being in shape and doing all of that. It's, what's the word?
Exclusive, inclusive.
Yes.
For me, it's like, I don't have a problem with overweight people either, like you, but being overweight isn't who you are. It's an outcome of what you do.
Yes.
And so if you are overweight, it means that like, you just don't take care of your body.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to do that, cool. You live your life 100%. I don't want to be that way.
Yeah.
And it's not because I don't want to be fat. It's because I want to take care of myself. Yeah. I feel better when I do it that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, nothing against people like that at all, but it's all just about, you know, self-discipline. And mm-hmm. the reason why being ripped is impressive is because you, with your size, you know how much work you've put in.
Yeah.
You know how hard it's been, but people don't.
Yeah.
They haven't seen your entire life.
Yeah.
And so they think you're gifted or they think you have something special when you've probably put in years of just misery trying to get where you are. And that's the reason why it is really, really impressive to be physically fit. And that's why it's idolized. Because it's freaking hard.
Yeah.
And I think slowly everyone's kind of more turning that way. I see, at least for myself, I see fitness influencers just everywhere popping up out of nowhere. And they show these transformation videos and it's like, holy cow, you freaking did that?
Yeah.
Like, I've been skinny my whole life. That's just who I am. Same. Genetics, genetic-wise, like I was the skinny short kid growing up. So that's never been something I've had or ever had a struggle with is like ever becoming overweight. But seeing that transformation is so powerful. It's really cool.
Everybody has a story.
Yeah, everyone does.
Everybody has a story, just some are not told.
So for you, for someone that's starting out, like, say, for instance, they're starting a business and they want to possibly create a business page. Would you suggest that, like, on social media? Or would you rather say, hey, just start a page for yourself and post all of the stuff about your business?
So I would say two things. The first is, what is your message? The second would be, you can create a page, you can get all the following, but if you don't have a message, why do you have a following? Why are you going through all this to create a page? So many people, we rush to get the website done, everything, get all this information, but then we don't realize what are we actually giving to the consumer. And so make sure you hone in on what is our product, what are we delivering, then you create the platform to deliver it. But then you also have to make sure once you deliver it, what is the client's journey? Are they valued? Are you adding value to their lives constantly? Because you can buy a product and then be done with them. Mm-hmm. Or if they buy a product and you add value to their lives constantly and you have something for them to keep continuing their journey with you, then they're with you for the long haul. And so I think people just take it one step at a time.
Okay.
Figure out your vision, your dream, what you want to do, how you want to add value. Come up with, you know, the numbers, what the product is, and then start pushing it out. And I would say start with social media. And, you know, you can create a link tree, create all your links, have it all there. But I guess even before all of that, honestly, find someone who's doing what you want to do, who has the recipe, take that recipe and follow it. I tell people all the time, we could bake brownies from scratch. Mm-hmm. But if you follow a recipe, you know what the end is
going to
be.
Yeah, it's going to be there.
Exactly.
Exactly what it says.
But so many people in our society take a recipe and we tweak it and we change it. And then if it doesn't come out perfect, we're angry. And it's like, well, you had the recipe. You knew what to do. All you had to do is follow it. Mm-hmm. And so find people with the recipe that you're looking for. Follow that recipe and you achieve the same things that they do.
So when you started out on this PR job, did you find someone that followed their recipe?
I had a professor, one of my PR professors, kind of took me under his wings, and I followed and did everything that he said and talked to anyone he connected me with. And I flew out places and just learned to just follow. And some of the stuff I may not agree with, but I followed it and it worked. And I was like, okay, he knows what he's talking about. And so that's kind of the process that I've had to take. And then even in lifting, I found a trainer that worked for me who had the results. And I'm like, this is perfect. I found a human behavior specialist, like a therapist, that worked for me. And I'm like, okay, he's got the recipe. Let me follow that. So I created these systems around me of people who have the recipes and what I want to achieve in my life and then just follow them.
So would you say to go find them on social media? If like that's
go find them, go follow them, take a shot, reach out. Hey, I want to connect. Hey, I'd love to grab dinner with you and have a phone call, whatever it is. Just reach out, connect with them, and then just soak in as much as possible.
So if you're trying to connect with someone and they're like not answering you back, not answering your DMs, how far would you go?
I'll give you an example. Let's say you wanted to connect with someone who has a huge podcast, huge following. Mm-hmm. What I would do is I would start with some of the guests that have been on their podcast.
Okay.
That are maybe smaller in name. Mm-hmm. Connect with all of those guests and then have those guests intro you and put you on Threads.
Yes. Okay.
And then when he sees, wait a second, he or she has connected with 1, 2, 3, 4 people that have had on my podcast and they're all telling me I need to connect. Mm-hmm. Then you have their ear and then you have a way in.
Okay, I like
and
that.
And so it's just building up your resume with people that they're already comfortable with.
Yeah, people already trust.
Yep. So my boss has a group chat with all of these huge influencers, celebrities, whatever you call it. And I used to, so I'm in this group chat and I'm like, well, I could just text them and reach out. And so I waited to, once I had met them and interacted with them, I grab a selfie with them, and then like a week later, I'll text and be like, hey, this is Jeff. We connected at X, Y, and Z. I dropped the pitch so they remember me. Mm-hmm. And then I can have the conversations with them because some rapport was created,
yeah.
An intro was made, and then I don't become a quote-unquote fan. I'm reaching out as a friend.
Okay.
Because the other thing is if I come to you as an influencer and I say, I love this product, I use it, everything, mm-hmm. you either become a fan or a customer. And the whole interaction changes.
Yes.
So are you trying to form a friendship or are you trying to be one of their raving fans?
Okay.
And that's the separation of, with some influencers, you don't talk business with them. You just have a relationship. Mm-hmm. There's a guy that I know in Utah. He flew Gary Vee back from an event.
Okay.
And he said on the plane ride, we just talked. Right before we landed, Gary Vee stopped and asked him, well, so what do you do for work? Because so many people, we go into things trying to be transactional.
Yes.
And how can I do business? How can I make money? How can I do this? If we just have conversations, we just create friendships, something organically is going to happen. And maybe it doesn't. That's fine. But you gained a new friend that can teach you so many insights. And maybe he has someone he'll connect you to if business is not right for the two of you.
Okay.
And so it's learning how to create these proper relationships and then nourishing the relationships.
When you are networking with people and you're introduced to them, it's so much easier. Like the networking on introduction is 10 times more powerful because you have the referral base behind you. And it's just less awkward.
Yeah.
You just go up and talk to someone you don't even know. I mean, they're cool. I'll say, hey, man, how are you? It's good to meet you. But if you introduce, hey, this is so-and-so, they've done this, 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 and this, just wanted to connect you guys. It's powerful.
Yeah. And my goal is any influencer I meet, I want to work and be able to talk to the influencer and not their assistant.
Yeah.
I hate reach out to my assistant, do this, do this. I want to be able to text them. And then if we need to get on the schedule, then I can go to the assistant. But I just hate you have all these levels that you have to go through. And I'm like, I just want to go direct to the source.
Yeah, that was when I met Russell Brunson a few weeks ago. That's what he did to me. He's like, I just talked to my assistant.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
And even his assistant would like take forever to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I saw you were out. You went and met Ryan Pineda?
Yeah,
we did.
Ryan.
Yeah, okay. We were down in Las Vegas.
We were in Vegas and we
just decided to go tour his place because we're like, you know, we've been following him for a long time. We're like, why not like go check it out? We knew someone there. And so she just like took us around and she just introduced us to him. And we're like, so what would you say for us when we were in that interaction? We kind of just like didn't know what to say because we were just so like, at that point we were a fan because we had been following him for a long time.
Yeah.
Even before we got into the space, we were following him. So what would you say we should have done in that instance when we did meet Ryan Pineda and he was just talking to us and getting to know us?
How much you know about Ryan?
We know.
We listened to him quite a bit.
He was a high-level athlete.
Yep, baseball player.
He played baseball. So for me with Ryan, I would have gone in and talked about baseball because it's a subject that has nothing to do with your business, his business, but it's something that he can relate to. But he also has learned a lot of life lessons from playing baseball that he applies to business.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start talking about a subject that he loves, he participated in, and then it starts turning into business after that because he has all these lessons. And so I try to pick subjects that are nothing to do with business because it doesn't seem transactional, right?
Yeah.
I'm not talking to him for a play on anything. I'm just having a conversation or getting to know him or, you know, he has young kids. How are your kids? Or what I've done a lot of times when I'll go and do like a major podcast and I take Chris to do a podcast, I'll try to set up like a lunch either before or after because we can film and everything, but then I want to be able to connect and be able to create some type of relationship.
Okay. So for me, if I was in that position, sometimes I feel like bad because I'm like, I don't want to waste your time talking about, for instance, like Ryan's time talking about baseball. How would I be able to overcome that? Because that's something that I struggle with is I don't want to. Do you kind of understand what I'm saying? I want to respect their time, but also I do want to make that relationship.
So they will disconnect.
Okay.
When they see that, okay, I've talked enough to this person and some, they'll either say something or they'll walk away or an assistant will step in. Like Chris, we spoke in an event and a bunch of people wanted to sign books and there was a cutoff. So I just went and stood and said, hey, thank you. He's got to go there. So just talk until.
Okay.
until they say
just
no.
Just don't worry about it, yeah. Basically. It's all in my head.
Yeah.
I think it is. Because I feel that way, too. It's, and up until that point, before I had met, like, Russell and Ryan, those are probably the first two people we've met that were pretty big. I personally had just always put them on, like, this pedestal, you mm-hmm. know? But yeah. when I met them, I'm just like, they're just, like, normal. They're literally normal yeah. people. The only difference between them and me is they've taken more risks and they have failed more than I have,
yeah.
right? They've mm-hmm. just taken more shots.
Yeah.
Everyone is just a human being. Mm-hmm. No one is special.
No, exactly.
And in God's eyes, we are all the same.
Yep.
It was really eye-opening for me. And mm-hmm. I think a lot, it just gets on all of people's head. It's like, oh, they have this huge following. Well, that doesn't make them special. That makes them knowledgeable, mm-hmm. makes them entertaining, mm-hmm. but it doesn't make them special.
I guess here's a question for both of you. We're a few months into 2024. Who are the top three people that you two are wanting to connect with?
I would say number one, there's this guy named Jeff Walker who okay. is... He specializes in product launches.
Okay.
We know nothing about it. So he's one of the only people that we've been able to find that actually will say they develop physical products and kind of like know what to do. He's for sure one of the other people. Honestly, for me, myself, we're still trying to find people in the product development space because we don't know what we're doing. And we're just kind of doing our best that we can. I don't know. You might have someone else that you think of.
I was thinking of Jeff. I went to a Grant Cardone Growth Con a few weeks ago. And I asked so many people if they knew anyone or if they had ever launched like a physical product, and no one ever had. They're all like, oh, I've launched like an online course. Well, that's really different, completely different. This yeah. is like a physical product that we're trying to sell. It's a different realm. And then most of the people who have like launched a product, they're not usually influencers.
Yeah.
It's really different. You know, like you could think of our product is going to be specifically for men. And I'm gonna tell you about it, but like you could take like men's products, right? Like Dr. Squatch or like Manscaped.
Yeah, if we could connect like to any of
their owners. Sorry, I interrupted.
You're good.
They're not influencers. Oh, like Liquid Death. You know Liquid Death?
Yeah.
The owner of Liquid Death, that guy's account, I've checked them all. He only has like 300 followers on yeah. Instagram mm-hmm. because he doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
And so it's like the network of people who actually have a following. Not a lot of them are in like the physical product
yeah.
space.
Yeah.
And we've messaged the guy and Dr. Squash on LinkedIn and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I've
haven't been able to.
I've tried to get a hold of all of them.
To make those quick.
But probably them. What about you, Jeff? 2024, who are you trying to connect with?
I want to find three people who can teach me things that I don't already know. And I don't even know what that is right now.
Yeah. yeah.
But I want to be in a room with three people when I hear them talk and I'm like, okay, I've never heard that or I love that perspective. Mm-hmm. And then reach out to them and have a conversation. I think that's, for me, that's the goal in 2024.
That's cool.
Like that.
Going back to networking, if you want people to introduce you to other people, you have to first be willing to introduce them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you have to be like, hey, this is my guy. This is my guy. Once you've done that like 100 times, then you can expect to get introduced to someone.
Yeah.
Don't automatically expect that you're the man. Because yeah. you're not. You haven't done anything.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to
everyone. No, of course.
Right? You haven't done anything yet.
Yeah.
Do something. Help other people. Literally provide value to everyone and they'll connect to you.
Yeah.
So, and it just goes back to what you're saying is once you put your feet on the pavement, that's when you'll find the connections.
Yeah.
Well, we are at 55 minutes here, so we should probably end it.
I think I would end it with just saying that in your faith, in business, in relationships, in whatever, I think the three biggest principles for me is what am I to learn, what am I to grow, and what am I to love? And if you ask yourself those three questions, whether you're going on a mission, whether you're getting ready to launch a product, whether you're going to an event, what am I to learn? What am I to grow? What am I to love? And those three things will change the whole outlook you have on anything you're doing in life. And so I just, that's been my new thing that I, whenever I connect with people, that's what I end with is ask yourself those three questions, weekly, monthly, whatever you're doing. And when you answer those three questions, then you'll see the success follow after that.
What are the three questions again?
So what am I to learn? What am I to grow? What am I to love?
I like it. I'll do that.
Yeah, we'll do it. You can ask us next time.
Perfect.
Here.
We'll
yeah,
do it.
Next
yeah.
time we see each other. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from you.
No, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for making time for us.
Of course.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I know you're busy.
Of course. I will always make time.
Oh, thanks.
Awesome. Cool. Well, we'll end this episode today, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Perfect. And thanks for being on the show, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you.